On today's episode of 23 is the Mic, we preview the Bears Week 8 matchup against the Saints. We'll give a preview of the top games from this weekend and what to watch for. And we're introducing a new fantasy segment where we'll give our starts of the week. Without further ado, let's go. Welcome into 23 is the Mic. It is Friday, October 30th. Happy early Halloween to everybody out there. Hope you're staying safe. Illinois cases of coronavirus just rose up incredibly, and we are now back on our lockdown. Dine-in restaurants have been closed. Takeout is encouraged. Help out your small businesses. Tuesday is election day. Make sure you go out and vote. Exercise your right and your civic duty as citizens of this country. Make sure you get out the word, go vote, and let's get some change in this country. Why not? I'm your host, Nadeem. You can find me on socials at TheDreamN22 on Twitter. You'd think I've gotten this down after doing this for so long. At NadeemN22 on Instagram. Follow the page at 23 is the Mic on Instagram and Twitter. This week has been an interesting week to say goodbye to another sport in baseball. We've had Champions League coverage this week as well. And why don't we just jump right into the news and notes from this week? So the big news, obviously, the Dodgers, Los Angeles Dodgers, they won the World Series against the Tampa Bay Rays in six games, predictably so, in rather non-dramatic fashion. There was one game, I think it was game four over the weekend. That was kind of the turning point, where Tampa Bay came back and won the game on a walk-off. But this series I've been saying this over the last couple seasons, maybe even all the way dating back to, I think probably 2013 when it was the Red Sox who swept the Cardinals. This is probably the most boring World Series that we've seen in a while. There was very little drama. A lot of the drama actually came afterwards. So after the game, well, we'll talk about the main thing that happened. Game six, Kevin Cash pulls starter Blake Snell, a former Cy Young Award winner, after five plus innings, after giving up two singles throughout the whole game, no earned runs up until that point. And he pulls his starter in the most pivotal game. He pulls his best player in the most pivotal game due to analytics, due to what the computers told him, due to the matchups he saw. And it bit him so hard right after that as Mookie Betts hit a one-out double. And the Dodgers ended up taking the lead after a wild pitch and a ground ball fielder's choice that Mookie Betts scored on. It's an interesting topic of conversation because it's how does analytics, how does the sabermetrics, the money ball of it all, how does that factor into, or how much of it should we take as human, like how much do we take out the human element? I feel like the eyeball test is one of the greatest things and one of the worst things, is that it can trick you into thinking something that is not. But at the same time, when you see your former Cy Young Award winner, your best pitcher, going the distance, having two hits over five innings, and you pull him after one single, it's incredibly, I don't know, like stick with your guns. And I guess that's what got them there. And to me, it was very reminiscent of what the Atlanta Falcons did in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. They were a high-powered offense throughout the entire season. They had a great passing attack, and they ended up sticking with their passing attack instead of running out the clock, which costed them in a costly holding penalty, costed them a crucial sack fumble recovery by Dante Hightower and the New England Patriots. So that was more of that. You're kind of doing what gets you there, but not what you should be doing in the moment. It was reminiscent also of Game 7 of the World Series, Cubs versus Indians, and Joe Maddon pulling Kyle Hendricks out after a walk in the fourth inning that opened the door to John Lester throwing a wild pitch and two runs scoring off of it. But we won't get that far into it. What's the main story in this is that after the game, in the middle of the game in the seventh inning, Justin Turner received a positive test for coronavirus. He was pulled from the game after receiving another positive test earlier the day before. And he started the game, he played seven innings, and then he received a positive test. He was put in quarantine isolation, and he, against the MLB's policy, the protocols and his better judgment. He went onto the field, celebrated, took off his mask, kissed his wife, took a team picture without his mask on, and put basically all of the players and the family members of those players in jeopardy after winning a World Series. And it's created this great debate of, should he have done that, but what should his punishment be? And for me, I don't care what it is. Over the last 6-7 months, we've all had to sacrifice so many things, and I get this is the World Series, and he's been playing a lot, and the Dodgers have been waiting for this moment after getting cheated out of a World Series in 17, after losing the World Series to the Red Sox in 18. So I understand all of that, but at the end of the day, you're putting people's lives at risk. You're putting people's lives in danger, and it's baseball is just a game at that point. It's not as big as, you know, the health of other people. And I think he should get at least a month suspension, if not maybe suspended the whole year, because that's just dramatically violating the protocols. That's like Astros cheating level type of stuff. In other baseball news, the White Sox, Chicago White Sox, have hired Tony La Russa, age 76, the Hall of Famer, as their manager in what I presume to be Jerry Reinsdorf sticking his hand and taking away the control from Rick Hahn. In 1986, Jerry Reinsdorf did not re-sign Tony La Russa, and Tony La Russa ended up having great success with the Oakland A's, with the St. Louis Cardinals, and Jerry Reinsdorf has called it, quote-unquote, his biggest regret. And this is a man who sided with Jerry Krause in not bringing back Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson after the 1997 season to win a seventh title. Instead, he wanted to go with what his general manager was saying. And now he's taking the power out of his general manager's hands and signing a 76-year-old manager who has not managed since the St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series in 2011. Now, the game has changed. For those of you that do not know, the game has changed drastically since 2011. You have stars in the making like Fernando Tatis, Javier Baez, Tim Anderson that play the game with fun, with jubilation, with an exuberance, a youthful exuberance that precedes all these old-fashioned traditional values that the baseball players of old stick with, the white baseball players. You always hear talk about baseball's unwritten rules. Well, where does that come from? After Carlos Gomez hits a mammoth home run and he stares at it, walks around the bases. The next at bat, he gets thrown at. You know, this celebration, this youthful, foreign exuberance, this basically minorities bringing fun to the game is frowned upon by old baseball writers, by old-fashioned baseball players, and they get thrown at. Now you're putting the Chicago White Sox, who have built a juggernaut of a roster. We have to give credit where credit is due, because Rick Hahn has done an exceptional job of assembling these pieces together. And now Reinsdorf thinks it's a good time to go away from what your GM is doing and take the power out of his hands, because you want to feel good about yourself for maybe remedying something that you shouldn't have done 24 years ago. I think that about sums it right. Tony La Russa is coming into a team, a roster, a dugout, where he's completely out of touch with how the game is. I mean, maybe he's not even out of, who knows? Maybe he's like still a great manager, still knows how to do it, but the culture is completely different. That's the main thing. You hired a guy when you could have hired an AJ Hinch, who had a fun culture with the Astros, or an Alex Cora, who had a fun culture with the dominant 2018 Red Sox. You maybe hire one of those guys that are more capable and in line to handle a team like this. Now you're bringing in Teddy Roosevelt to kind of manage, I don't know who's big now, Kanye West or like DaBaby or something, you know, like something that's completely out of their culture, out of character for them. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, nothing's going to be able to be really definitively said until we get bat on ball next year. But I just think it's a hilarious hire. Like, I was laughing so much at the memes, at the references, and it's clearly an uncomfortable situation within the organization because they didn't pick their guy. And it makes me feel so blessed and appreciative that Theo and Jed got our guy in Joe Maddon before the 2015 season. Because we got our guy, and that's what put us over the edge. If you watch the White Sox playoff series against the Oakland A's this year, they were outmanaged, and it was the manager that they were lacking, but you could see they have talent. You could see they have firepower on offense, great pitching, a great roster assembled. But they needed that one manager to take them over the top. Can La Russa, after 9 years away from the sport, can he come back and really prove that he's the manager that will take this team over the top? Who knows? We'll see. I personally don't think so, but he can prove me wrong.
And that's the way the news goes.
The Bears take on the Saints this Sunday late afternoon at Soldier Field, and the weather is said to be a big factor in this one. Michael Thomas is out for this game, so the Saints don't have as much of a bevy of weapons on offense as they'd like to. But the Bears are coming off a really, really bad loss to the Los Angeles Rams on Monday night. And right now the Bears are ranked 26th in offense and 6th in defense, which is not what you want to be because you have a Super Bowl caliber defense that you're basically wasting. They're also 31st in the NFL in rushing. And Matt Nagy, let's talk about Matt Nagy because I've been boiled up and hot about Matt Nagy the entire week. Matt Nagy is 25-14 in his Bears tenure. He has scored 25 points, or his offenses have scored 25 points or more six times in about 40 games. This is an offensive guru who is said to come in and change the offense, make us like Kansas City, and all it's been is just gimmicky plays left and right. Let's blame the quarterbacks. And that's what worked for a really long period of time because Mitch Trubisky was taking most of the flack, as untalented as Mitch Trubisky is. I feel for him now because of the fact that it completely just blanketed over the fact that Matt Nagy is not a good play caller. And this week, he said that the problem is not with the play calling. He said they have looked at everything, and he does not think that the play calling is the issue, and he will not give it up. And that just is ridiculous due to the fact that the stat that I just stated, 25 points in only 6 games in 40 games. Now, NFL's offenses are flying high. The Green Bay Packers are averaging 35 points. The Bears are averaging a league low 20 points per game. That's not going to get the job done, and that's not going to win you games at all. Even with a really good defense and a terrible offense, the 2006 Bears averaged 27 points per game. That was 2006. We are in 2020. Offenses have evolved. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Kevin Stefanski have changed the game in a way that we have seen. You have Patrick Mahomes coming in, Russell Wilson doing his thing, Tom Brady at the age of 43 bawling out. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are looking like they're the best team. And somehow, in some way, Matt Nagy thinks he is absolved from all the problems with the Bears. He doesn't think it ends with him. He doesn't take accountability or responsibility for anything that ever goes wrong. We saw this a lot last year where he was blaming the media, getting on the media's backs, like Jerry Jones last week when he told the radio host on his weekly radio hit to shut up. And Matt Nagy is more of the same in terms of the stubbornness and the unwillingness to take any responsibility for his actions and his terrible play calling. I can say that every single week, the biggest matchup in the games the Bears play is going to be their offensive line versus whatever team's defensive line, because that's where the games start and end. That's it. There is no other place that this game will go other than in the trenches on the offensive line, and the Bears are going to get destroyed by Cam Jordan. They're going to have balls tipped up in the air and thrown up by Thomas Davis, and Marshawn Lattimore could have a game. Patrick Robinson is a great corner who can also have a game here. Why? Because Nick Foles is going to be under pressure as he's been all season long. There are no changes the Bears have made since last week, so we're going to see more of the same. Give me 31-14 Saints. And that's really all there is to talk about. If this team won't address the changes and effectively, maneuver and adjust accordingly, accordingly, then what are we going to sit here and do? Because we have the Titans next week. That's going to be 5-4, basically, going from 5-1 on a 3-game losing streak. Morale low in the locker room, and who knows where this season could end up 7-9 after 5-1, and we've seen that so many times with the Bears, unfortunately. All right, so this week's of NFL, this is week 8, and it's all about the storylines. There's a lot of storylines going into this week. Maybe not the best of matchups, but one premier matchup, and the matchup in the game to watch of the weekend is going to be Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. The Pittsburgh Steelers are coming into this week 6-0 against the 5-1 Baltimore Ravens. You have the number one defense in the league in the Pittsburgh Steelers, who basically dominated the Tennessee Titans last week. And then you have the Baltimore Ravens, who are coming off a bye. Lamar Jackson hasn't looked great this year. The running game hasn't looked as dominant as it did last year. There's no passing game because of Lamar Jackson, and the defense has taken a hit. However, they did trade for Yannick Ngakoue, who's going to bolster that defensive line alongside Calais Campbell. Marlon Humphrey is there. So it's really these two defenses that are high-powered going against each other, and let's see which offense, who had great success, the Pittsburgh Steelers early this year and the Baltimore Ravens last year, which offense can break out and really maybe carry some momentum going forward. Now, the smart bet is probably to take the Pittsburgh Steelers in this game, and that's exactly what I'm going to do because the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, are going to roll. Their offense is going to maybe exploit some of the weaknesses in the Baltimore Ravens secondary that hasn't been playing up to the standard that they set last year, and Lamar Jackson is going to continue to struggle. Last year, Lamar Jackson played one game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were Big Ben Roethlisberger-less, and he didn't play in the Week 17 matchup against them, and he threw... That was his worst game. He threw 161 yards and 3 interceptions. And this defense is much better than last year. They have all the momentum in the world. Minkah Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt, Bud Dupree, Terrell Edmonds. Just ballers on every side of the ball. You got Chase Claypool coming off his great season. Juju Smith-Schuster back in the fold after getting targeted a bunch last week. Deontay Johnson had 2 touchdowns last week. He's practicing. He's looking good and ready to go. Give me the Steelers in this one. And I think they roll and continue on to 7-0. The next matchup is going to be the 49ers and the Seahawks. Russell Wilson and his high-powered offense versus Jimmy G and the low-powered offense of the Seahawks defense. Can Jimmy G exploit the problems in the Seahawks secondary? I think he will. I think he's going to find Greg Kittle a lot. The run game, depending on who's healthy, someone's going to eat. Jamichael Hasty could eat. Derek McKinnon could eat. I don't think Tevin Coleman's practicing, so he probably won't be available in this game. And I take the Seattle Seahawks, who are also coming off a loss to the Cardinals, so I think they have extra motivation, and I think they win this game rather handily. The debut of Tua Tagovailoa against the Los Angeles Rams. I feel like you could not have asked for a worse team to debut against, maybe the Steelers, but that defensive line that just ate the Bears last week, Aaron Donald and those boys, Jalen Ramsey in the secondary, coming after Tua. It's going to be a rough, rough week, and hopefully he stays healthy. That's the big thing, coming off of a hip injury. What's interesting about the Miami Dolphins' decision to start Tua, really, is Ryan Fitzpatrick was clearly upset at the decision. He was rolling. He thought this was his team, and he wasn't informed. I don't think Brian Flores made this decision. I don't think it came from him because the respect that he has for Ryan Fitzpatrick and really a veteran head coach or maybe a smart head coach would definitely tell his quarterback that this move was coming, or a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick would be aware that this move was coming. And I think this came from upper management based on the performances of Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow, maybe even some pressure wanting to see where you're at with this quarterback and Tua, so that you can kind of assess the situation and see if you want to use one of your draft picks in the upcoming great QB class that is. So there could be something going on there. I like the Rams in this game too much. I don't see the breakout from Tua coming here yet. It's a rough schedule this season for him. I feel bad. Another revenge game. Last week we had a bunch. This week it's Le'Veon Bell against the New York Jets. Chiefs by a million in this one. And then the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield. I have to give a shout out to my dude, Baker Mayfield, go after his 5-touchdown performance, looking to lead his Browns against the Las Vegas Raiders. Derek Carr has been balling this year. If you look at the quarterback rankings, look where Derek Carr is. I think he's sixth in this past week's quarterback rankings. And this is going to be a good game. Two evenly matched teams, I feel, without OBJ on the Cleveland Browns offense. They take a little hit, but Baker's more free to distribute the ball, to throw it out there to his receivers. And maybe the Browns take this one, as I predict that they will do. And now we can get into, I'm really excited for this, my fantasy segment, fantasy starts of the week. So why I'm doing this, basically, I spend a lot of time on fantasy research and fantasy in general these past couple weeks, just based on, you know, fantasy football in general. But I think it'd be cool. And also, like, when I get reassurance from other people based on who to start, who to sit, who to trade for, it also gives me better confidence. So I'm going to go over just the starts of the week and some sleepers maybe. And then on Tuesday's show, I'm going to do waiver wire pickups for that week and maybe drop candidates. So we'll start with my QB start of the week. It's Ryan Tannehill against the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals come in as the 25th ranked defense against opposing quarterbacks. So it's a great defense to throw numbers up onto. Also, Ryan Tannehill is currently the 7th quarterback on the year. He's thrown for over 1,500 yards. He's thrown for 16 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. He's very good. And the best part about Ryan Tannehill is that he's not pass dependent. When Derrick Henry eats, Ryan Tannehill also eats. And if Derrick Henry dominates the Cincinnati running game, Ryan Tannehill can just throw some play action red zone passes to maybe to A.J. Brown, to Jonnu Smith, and Anthony Firkser. And I think that Ryan Tannehill is a great play for this week. Some sleepers on the week, Jimmy Garoppolo against the Seattle defense. Seattle is 28th in the league against opposing quarterbacks. And I think you could just throw anybody up there against their defense and you'll be good. For my running back start of the week, it's Jonathan Taylor against the Detroit Lions. Now, Jonathan Taylor should be one of the best running backs in the league, based on his play alone. Now, his usage is the only issue. His usage has not been as good as fantasy owners have wanted. But Jonathan Taylor, all systems go in this game. I think he's a great play. And I also feel like you learn about Jonathan Taylor in this game. This is a great matchup against one of the not-so-great defenses in the league. And Jonathan Taylor's usage, especially coming off the bye, will be tested here. And I feel also that Jonathan Taylor, if he does good in this game, that'll give you more confidence rest of season. And if he does bad in this game, that can it's kind of a gauging game to show you where he's at in the offense with Frank Reich. So Jonathan Taylor, go for it. On my wide receiver side of the ball, Brandon Ayuk against the Seattle defense. For many of the reasons that I mentioned previously, Seattle has been 32nd against opposing wide receivers. They're giving up around 40 points per game to the wide receiver position. Brandon Ayuk is really the only wide receiving option with Debo Samuel injured, and he's the number one. And he had a great game last week against New England with 115 yards on 7 targets. So I think Ayuk is going to have a rocket ship taped to him, and he's a great play. Also, AJ Green is a great start as well. Now, I think that AJ Green is being targeted a bunch because since he wants to trade him, and he's going against the Tennessee Titans, who all have the 25th ranked defense when it comes to against opposing wide receivers. So AJ Green's a good start. And then there's a bunch of sleepers this week with Higgins, Denzel Mims, Sterling Shepard. So if you're in a tight spot and you want to start one of them, go for one of those guys, Higgins, Denzel Mims, Kendrick Bourne even. I'm telling you, 40 points per game to the wide receiver position. It might not even be all Brandon Ayuk. It could definitely be Kendrick Bourne getting into the mix as well. And then my tight end start of the week is Richard Rodgers, who's going against the Dallas defense. We all know about the Cowboys defense. Against opposing tight ends, they're 24th. Dallas Goedert is not in the mix this week, so it's all Richard Rodgers. And Carson Wentz targets the tight end. Last week, he had a pretty good game, and the Cowboys have also allowed a tight end to score in 4 of their past 6 games. So those are my starts of the week. If you guys have any questions, hit up the podcast Instagram page. I'll be doing any questions that you want. Just comment, and I'll be commenting a reply to them to kind of answer any of your fantasy questions. Thank you to everyone for listening to the show this week. Catch us at 23 is the mic on Instagram and Twitter. I'm your host, Nadim, once again. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. This is 23 is the mic. Have a great weekend. Love you guys.